Even with the recession behind us, it is just not easy anymore for a person to walk out of college with a degree and straight into a job. Today's guest is well aware of that. Daniel Siddiqui graduated from college, started looking for work, and did not get it right away. So at some point, we'll ask which, he said, time for a new approach. And he embarked on a quest to work 50 jobs in 50 states a week at a time. He wrote a book about it several years back and still travels the country talking about his experiences. He'll speak at Southern Oregon University at the Music Recital Hall in Ashland at 5:30 this evening. And he's here in the studio with us now. Daniel Siddiqui, welcome.
Oh, pleasure being here. Thanks.
It's a little hard to give you an introduction because it's not like you really had a career established before this cross-country venture. So tell us about your longer background, where you grew up and what your dreams were in early life for a career.
Well, I grew up in the Bay Area, California, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought of pursuing something that I was familiar with, which was in business, and because that's what my dad's an entrepreneur. He's always run his own company, and my older brother kind of followed suit, and he became an investment banker. So that was kind of the lines that I was – the road I was heading down. So I went to U of O in 2000, so I was a freshman there, and that was actually my first major that I declared was business administration. But if you were to ask me, like, what were my dream jobs, it had nothing to do with business or economics. That's what I ended up getting a degree in. But it was always pursuing journalism or screenwriting. But now I did 50 different jobs, and it kind of opened my world and kind of a new inspiration to pursue. So I was all over the place, and it had a lot to do with my lack of awareness.
Awareness of what?
What was out there, what was outside of my comfort zone, which I talk about quite a bit in my presentations, is just learning not to limit yourself on where you're from and what you're familiar with. So all I knew was, and I thought the world – I didn't know the world around me, right? So I thought what I was experiencing was the world, you know. And especially growing up, my parents always said that, you know, California is the place to be, and there's nothing else better than it. And so that just actually kind of left me curious. And when I went to U of O, it was my first time leaving and kind of, you know, leaving that bubble. And got a chance to really go out of my comfort zone and explore what was out there. And Oregon is actually my favorite state. Not saying that because I'm here now, but I would never have known unless I you know, went out into it and explore. So
your degree was in economics, you said, from USC?
Yeah. So I went to Oregon for 3 years, transferred over because of athletic reasons, and then graduated with a degree in econ.
What athletic reasons? Were you taking part in a sport?
Yes,
I was. You cheer for the Trojans.
No, that would be lame, right? No, I actually was a track and field athlete at U of O and USC, and they were hurting bad for long distance runners at USC, so I had a better offer there.
So college graduation comes about. You got this leather diploma in hand, you know, walking out with the rest of your class. What did you think was next, and how soon did you think it was going to happen?
I didn't want to graduate because I was in that position where I didn't know what was next. And a lot of my classmates seemed like they had it figured out, but now 10 years later, they don't, you know. So I was just going to use that degree and start sending my resume out online, which sucked, and that's kind of was ineffective, really, as I learned today. Sending out resumes is the worst way to look for a job.
Go straight to the recycle bin, do you think?
Yep. I mean, I even get resumes right now, look at applications, and, you know, if I don't like what I see right away, then I won't even bother reading the rest of it. So it's just a time-consuming process, of course, for all these HR departments. But I failed 40 job interviews in all my field of study of economics. So at least I was able to earn a lot of these interviews.
That's an interesting verb you choose, though, that you failed 40 job interviews. I mean, you didn't get the job. I mean, is that just a...
Failing meaning that, you know, I just did not earn any position. I guess rejected is a better word. And it was not like I wasn't capable or qualified for these positions. I was invited for third round, four round interviews.
So you got very deep into the interview process.
Yep, very deep, where it was me versus one other individual. And I just never got my break. And so that's when I came to this breaking point myself where, all right, 40, that's enough. I got to do something different, which is what you kind of alluded to, is that, you know, do something, a new approach. And kind of choose my own destiny. And
all right, we'll talk about what that approach was as we move past this break. Well, much more with Daniel Siddiqui, who did 50 jobs in 50 states over the course of a year. You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. Daniel will also be speaking at Southern Oregon University's Music Recital Hall in Ashland tonight at 5:30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Daniel Siddiqui and your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Daniel Siddiqui. He graduated from college. He began to look for jobs. He got into third and fourth rounds of interviews and didn't get any of them. Not a single one after 40 different rounds of interviews. And then he decided he needed to do something different. So he traveled the country performing 50 jobs in 50 states, wrote a book on that very subject, and now he travels the country talking about his earlier travels of the country. He'll be speaking at Southern Oregon University tonight at 5:30 at the Music Recital Hall. He's our guest here now. And you can join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So was there this little nub of an idea you had tossed around partway through these interviews that began to grow bigger, or was it something that just made you go, aha?
It was a aha moment several times through. There was several breaking points where I was like, okay, I had enough of having these employers choosing my destiny for me. Like if I got a yes, then I would stuck in a job I probably wouldn't like anyways. If I got a no, that's another rejection and a lot of more time and money and energy wasted. So I actually spent a lot of money going to these interviews back and forth too. Sometimes I was living in Chicago at the time, flew back to California, to LA and all that, all on my own dime. So yeah, it was a rough process. And then I just had these breaking points where it was like, okay, I had enough. I'm going to have this. I had this idea of doing 50 jobs because I ended up in Atlanta, Georgia. It was like my fifth state in 2 years. And it was all volunteer jobs that I found. And I was having culture shocks in each of these places, including Oregon here. And it just made me curious of what was out there, what I'm missing out on. And I really wanted to see the country, learn from others, and just expose myself, you know. So I had the idea of doing stereotypical jobs all across the country, and it gave me a whole new purpose. And you're probably wondering how I was able to find 50 jobs when I couldn't find one. And the answer and solution was that I was finally focused. You know, I finally had that purpose and that drive, and nothing was going to stop me. And I kind of think about it as I train, because I'm also an athlete, former collegiate athlete, as I mentioned. I was just hanging out with my Olympic friend and Eugene last night, and I was thinking, how is he able to motivate himself? We're the same age, 10 years now after college graduation. It's because he's training for the Olympics, a big purpose, you know. And I can't train like he is now because I don't have that same level, you know. And so now I felt like now my job seeking is at that really high level and that kind of challenge that I needed. So
give us the timeline here. Your graduation was in 05 or 04?
05.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all right. So that's when you graduated. And
I was looking for work until about 08.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Long
so what
time.
Did you do for money while you were looking? You mentioned traveling on your own dime.
I was actually, during those 3 years of not ever having a full-time job offer, was doing just odd jobs like Bed Bath & Beyond. I did part-time accounting. I was selling kitchen appointments at Home Depot, just the most odd things you can imagine that an econ grad should never try.
The process of interviewing, though, and you mentioned getting into third and fourth rounds with some of these and 40 job interviews that with jobs you didn't get. Did you get a sense of what did not click in these situations? Was it you? Was it them? Was it some combination?
They could have maybe saw through me that I wasn't passionate about this position. I was just like any other person as an entry-level job, just trying to get experience and, build a life and a career. But in terms of what I was doing in prep and all that, I couldn't see anything I was doing wrong. My parents were even trying to support me on this in this process because they didn't want me to come back home, of course. So I took interviewing courses. I dressed to impress. I had a great personality. I was well prepared for the interview. It's just, I don't know what it was. And I always asked, what did I do wrong? How can I improve? They never gave me an answer.
Really? It seems like a lot of people ask that and they never get told.
Yeah.
Daniel Siddiqui is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He did 50 jobs in 50 states over the course of a year. Stereotypical jobs, he mentioned. So just to get an idea of how stereotypical they were, you mentioned going to Atlanta, Georgia. You were a peanut sheller in Georgia. You worked as a logger in Oregon, for example. Connecticut, where there's so much insurance industry, you worked in the insurance business. So these really are jobs that were suited to each state. How did you decide the itinerary, though, and why start in Utah, for example?
Well, when I had this idea, I didn't know how to go about it, and I thought I'd just compose this resume to myself of jobs I wanted to fulfill, and I knew already, studying geography and all that in the country, what each state is known for. So corn farming in Nebraska, logging here in Oregon, winery in Napa Valley, or movie industry, whatever, in California. And so I just wrote that down and I just served that as a checklist and I started making cold calls and whatever job or state offered me a position, that's kind of where I started. And then I would work around that and logistics started to, arrange itself as I was lining up work. So I tried to make my drives easy from state to state by having these states border one another.
Sure. So Utah to Colorado is
obviously and then over to South Dakota, then North Dakota and all that. So I try to arrange it that way.
So the planning was going on as you were doing these jobs.
Correct.
The responses from places that you were talking about, and you said, I just want to be there for 1 week. I mean, do they just see it as kind of a lark or a gimmick or something?
Not at all. I mean, how could it be a gimmick? I mean, I was just a job seeker from California, and I didn't tell the employers I was doing 50 jobs in 50 states because that did not work. I got a lot of hang-ups. I got a lot of laughing at me, and I got a lot of, hey, that's impossible, even from my parents. So I had no support. It was just me with this ambition and this mission of, self-discovery and building awareness.
I think you've already answered one question, which was, did anybody try to talk you out of this? And it sounds like yes.
I had nobody support me. Absolutely nobody. I mean, it was just me against the world, and that's what it took for me to embark on this journey because I had no other outlet. I just needed to prove to myself I was capable. And so as time went on and I started landing jobs after jobs, this was my 12th job in my 12th week. And then I went home for Thanksgiving right after Oregon, and my parents were totally different towards me. They were supportive. They were like rooting me on. They're like, wow, you're crazy. You can actually do this. And they were just became a lot more supportive that way. Here, they're even coming to hear me speak tonight, driving from California. So that goes to show that they've been on board ever since week week 12. So,
all right. So just to be clear, did any of the people that you were getting these jobs with know that it was just going to be for a week?
Yes, all of them did, which made it actually more difficult to find jobs. I got nearly, and I spoke with a lot of students about the rejections that I go through. USA Today called me the most rejected person in the world because of these ambitions that I had. So nearly 5,000 employers gave me a no. And that's about 100 per state. That didn't matter. I took that out of the equation, and that's what it took to get that one yes. And that's all I needed, one yes out of the entire state. And I was willing to go anywhere in the state of Oregon, state of Washington, to find that job that, you know, fits the culture, economy of the
Did you get any yeses on the first place you called in a particular state?
No, never did.
Never did.
Never did. But when that one yes came, that's when it was like all worth it. You know, nice. It was like, okay, I got it. And it just got me excited to move on to the next.
So how long did the advanced setup go before you even started the first job? I mean, I have to believe that with all the rejections you got that
it took me about 2.5 months to get that first yes. Wow. And that was with corn farmers in Nebraska. But that was not the first job that I worked. It was actually I chose that because of the harvest season. Mm-hmm. And just going back to the logistics, I had to arrange it in terms of the seasons and all that too. So I would say it's an impossible mission, but now that I did it, yeah, nearly impossible journey. But you know, if you have that drive, you can really do anything. And tonight my talk is about life is what you make it. And I saw that in my own personal journey and development, and I saw it on a weekly basis through others and the experiences I had with them.
Daniel Siddiqui is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He worked 50 jobs in 50 states and wrote a book about it, blogged about it. There's lots of stuff on his website about it. That is at Living the Map. We'll talk about the web address in just a few moments. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange before Daniel's appearance tonight at the Music Recital Hall at Southern Oregon University. Our phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or email address jx@jeffnet.org. Did you have to do something to finance this when you began the process?
No, I actually, you know, 3 years unemployed, no support. I had to just hit the road and find ways to make it happen, and ended up getting a paycheck from 45 out of 50 jobs.
Really?
Yep.
Let us take a couple of calls. Put your headphones on so you can hear. And here is Jacob in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Daniel Siddiqui, 50 jobs in 50 states.
Hello, good morning to you both. Try this experiment. Ask a child what they want to do when they grow up. You know, ask them, like a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, 16-year-old, 18-year-old. And the amazing thing is they do not know what they want to do. They don't know what work is. They don't know what a job is. They don't know what it means to have a boss or to show up for work, to be on time, to be well-groomed. They literally do not know. And I would have to say they spend more time playing video games than they do, for instance, doing any type of job career exploration. And of course, the latter is what's going to influence and shape their lives and, you know, generate their income and enable them to lead the life that they want to lead. You know, but if they would spend, as you know, half the time they play video games doing job exploration, they'd be a lot more complete as a human being. And I wanted to suggest that what Daniel was doing, if instead kids in high school, if they took one day off a week and arranged for some type of preceptorship or internship where they would do one job and then write about it in one single paragraph page, but they'd have to experience the whole day from sunup to sundown for that particular job. And hopefully it'll be a hands-on, real experience. But let's say a baker, they have to wake up at this time, they have to get the flour, they have to, you know, manhandle the dough, mix it, you know, then they have to proof it, bake it, rise it, and everything else, and they have to, you know, sell the bread and everything like
that. All right, so the point being to put down the Xbox controller and get out there and learn how to do something.
Yeah, but I think anyone, even any adult, would learn a lot just from being around a baker for a day. And kids would learn something about, you know, of course they might not be a baker, but they'd learn something, at least about how to maintain a job or what that type of job entails.
All right.
And if they could write a single paragraph over it, I think that would go a long way in terms of having a memorable high school experience.
All right. Thanks for that, Jacob. Appreciate it. Daniel, your thoughts first on the general advice here, but also as it applies to you, and if you found anything in all the 50 jobs that appealed to you enough to consider doing it again for a full-time thing.
Well, I definitely agree with the caller. I mean, just getting any type of experience, exposure, building that awareness, and that's what I lacked. If it weren't for extracurricular activities like track and field, you know, I wouldn't have built the skills needed to pursue this 50 jobs mission. So in terms of personal development, just exposing yourself to different activities, groups, organizations, travel builds curiosity and stimulation, just challenging yourself in many ways that you can. And that's kind of what I'm doing now. So I have this program set up for college students where they get to a rapid prototyping of work in their field of study. So if you're interested in marketing, I would set you up in, you know, different marketing firms and in different areas of interest, so like sports or not. So that's what we're doing now, and I'm excited to see what they take away, like I was able to take away on my personal journey.
And again, was there any one job that you went, hey, this is something I could come back to over and over
again?
Oh,
I mean, there's a lot of jobs that I really loved and I wish I could have stayed for. And I did end up getting a lot of full-time job offers from these employers, maybe about 48 out of the 50. And they said, if you're willing to stay, we're willing to hire you. Or when you're finished with your journey, we're willing to take you on when you come back, if you're willing to come back. And I just wanted to see how I can parlay my experience into a career, which I've been able to do with this new program and lecturing and authoring and all that. But yeah, there's a lot of great jobs out there that I had no idea they existed, you know. So actually my favorite job was being a dietitian in Mississippi, our most obese state.
Really?
Yep. And I had a little feel of it being an athlete and having a personal nutritionist, but actually going out into a different environment, seeing the locals and kind of their way of life really just opened my mind up to a different type of career. So.
But boy, talk about running from one end of the spectrum to the other. A dietitian in Mississippi, and then the next week was in Wisconsin as a cheesemaker.
Making cheese, yeah. Actually, two of the most obese states in the country. But just getting that experience, I mean, it's changed my life and my perspective and my respect for what people do.
Well, let me flip the previous question mm-hmm. around then, because was there any job that you thought, oh my God, this is so awful?
I mean, absolutely.
We used of you online was lying in the peanut shells in Georgia.
I mean, I could get a sense if I liked the job or if I fit, you know, if my personality fit just in a couple hours of a job. Because I felt like a job is a personality. I mean, I was working amongst football coaches and they all had that kind of rough, you know, like yelling mentality and very competitive.
That was in Alabama, of course.
Yeah, Alabama. And then I was a weatherman in Cleveland, Ohio, where everyone's like very perky. And you know, it's just interesting to see the differences and how they fit. But there was a lot of jobs that I could not wait till the week was over. And then there's, again, I wish there was I could have extended it. So a lot of it had to do with the people, not the job itself, but the people I worked with and kind of their, you know, just their willingness to serve as a great mentor and having that positive energy. So,
was anybody really suspicious of your motives? I mean, when you tried to work did work as a logger in Oregon,
did
they think you were from some environmental group or something?
I haven't thought about that, but yeah, there's a lot of people who were kind of skeptical, like, why did we hire this guy? Not the bosses themselves, but like my coworkers, like, why did we hire this guy? We have to train him just for a week, you know, and so that, for instance, in cheese making Wisconsin, I mean, that was one of the hardest jobs you can ever find in this country.
What makes it hard?
Oh, it's all hands on, very physical, labor intensive, and very long hours.
Sore arms, hands, backs, feet.
Everything. And it's monotonous. It's very timely oriented. If you miss it by like 30 seconds to a minute, you have to start all over again, the whole process. Yeah, it's that precise. But yeah, I was with coworkers who were like, well, you know, why should we train this? They were unfriendly. I had even one coworker yell at me saying, I thought you came here to learn, you know, and you're just there. But I was actually on my lunch break setting up my future jobs, you know, so I wasn't only working the jobs that I was supposed to, but just setting up the future ones as well. So
all kinds of experiences on the road for Daniel Siddiqui, who worked 50 jobs in 50 states over the course of a year and got paid for all but two of them. I guess we'll have to ask which two when we come back from all but five of them, he shows me. We'll come back from the break and take your phone calls and emails about his process, about the jobs, about employment issues more generally. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we return with Daniel Siddiqui in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Daniel Siddiqui. He graduated from college in 2005, went through a series of job interviews, didn't get a single job, and thought, you know, it's time to try something else. The something else was radical indeed. Daniel went out and then worked 50 jobs in 50 states over the course of the following year, wrote a book about it, blogged about it at the time, and now travels the country talking about it and is trying to help other people work through their issues with getting careers. And he will be appearing tonight at 5:30 at the Southern Oregon University Music Recital Hall. You can join our discussion right here and now on The Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Daniel Siddiqui.
Yes, good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Daniel.
Morning.
Well, a couple of random thoughts, comments, and a couple of questions for you, Daniel. First of all, kudos to your serendipity in the employment world. It kind of reminds me of, well, let's put it this way. It gives a whole new spin to the phrase temp worker, because you certainly did that a lot. It's kind of like a confusion between that and around the world in 80 days,
mm-hmm.
sort of a serendipitous moment. Let's see. Also, let's see. Well, okay, let's just get to the questions. First of all, I think that this was hinted at earlier in the program, but you did not get paid for a few of these occupations. Now, did you volunteer or were you an intern? What were the circumstances of that? And the second thing was, if you had to, like, give a mean average of what the average worker, like, say, for a living wage or something like that across the country would be, what kind of a dollar figure per hour would you put on that? And, Jeffrey, I'll take his responses off of the telephone.
All right. Thanks for that, Jamie.
To answer your first question, the five jobs that did not pay me were mostly governmental jobs. It's because of the lengthy process of getting the approval. I wasn't willing to wait and invest that time. I didn't really have the time to do that. But there was one job that was considered an internship, and that was when I was working as a petroleum engineer in Texas for Chevron. But other than that, yeah, they were all job offers. I went through the application process, interviewing process, most of it by phone and email, of course. And there was about five states I showed up without having a job lined up yet, and that's when I became a little more aggressive and persistent and started networking, putting myself out there with just strangers that were willing to help. So to answer your second question, for my experiences, my highest paid was $2,000 in 1 week, and I was making medical equipment in Minnesota, and that ranged to as low as $400, and I was working with Amish building furniture in Pennsylvania. So, yeah, on average, it's about, you know, $1,000 to $1,200 per week. I don't know what that comes out to on hourly wage, but I was getting what a typical employee or my coworker was getting. So I wanted to be treated as a normal employee and fairly as well. So,
did you make some judgments then about whether people are getting paid fairly in the jobs? I mean, when you talk about the difficulty of the Wisconsin cheesemaker's job, I don't know how much they get paid. Are they getting paid enough, you think, for how hard that job is?
I believe so. I believe that job itself, it was probably like $22 an hour making cheese. Of course, I mean, you're hurting your back and all that. It's It's up to you to make those calls. That's one of the industries, sole industries in Wisconsin where I was in a small community. So not too many options. But yeah, I feel like people were treated fairly all across the board. I even got a chance to work with migrant field workers outside of Bakersfield, and they were treated fairly too. I mean, the bosses would come around and tell them when to take breaks. A lot of them weren't willing to take breaks because they wanted to get paid for that extra hour and work through their lunch. So it's just it's a hard question to answer because it's so varied all across the country.
The jobs, again, were supposed to be somewhat stereotypical for the states. I was going to ask you why furniture builder in Pennsylvania when you added the fact that you're doing it with the Amish. It certainly completely made sense. Before that, though, and this is in week 39, in Delaware, incorporating specialist. Of course, Delaware seems to be, you look at any corporation, it almost always has a Delaware corporation.
Yeah.
Why is Delaware the place everybody incorporates, and what did you actually do in that week?
It's business friendly. I mean, it's the tax benefits, tax breaks there. I'm incorporated there myself.
Are you a Delaware corporation?
Yes, I am. Living the map and take advantage of my networks, right? So they gave me a nice discount. my job there was just filing the paperwork. That was a job that I don't really talk about out of all my experiences because nothing exciting, nothing really memorable. But still, it was a huge industry in that state.
Let us take another phone call. Here's John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Daniel Siddiqui, 50 jobs in 50 states.
Is it me, John?
Yes, you.
Okay, I just want to make a comment that I applaud Mr. Siddiqui's effort and also sales about the effort, what he's done. But I don't think it's quite an original idea because I'm a BBC website watcher for years, and there was a case where somebody 50 different jobs or 50 different countries or something of the sort. I just wanted to comment about that.
All right. Appreciate that, John. I mean, did you crib the idea from somebody else? It's not like it hasn't been done.
Not
before.
At all. I mean, I did this in 2008, and I know that there's people who have followed suit. When he mentioned 50 countries, somebody did that in Europe. Or no, he did 23 European countries, and he actually wrote me and said, hey, I'm planning to do this. Can you tell me how you were able to? I get that all the time. People said, oh, you robbed me of my dream. You did this before me and all that. And it's just, that's just the way it is, you know?
Well, it's not like another person couldn't do it. I mean,
yeah,
maybe their
go
book
for it. I mean,
well
good
you.
Luck. Yeah.
Here's another call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Daniel Siddiqui.
Good morning. My question is, what did you do for work in Hawaii, Alaska, and the state of Maine?
Hawaii, I was a surfing instructor. That was my 49th job. The week before, I was in Alaska doing outdoor photography for National Geographic. And then Alaska, the week before that, I was lobstering in Maine. Yep. So actually, those were the three of the toughest jobs because of the travel. I was so sick of lobstering, being out on the ocean, and then I had to return back to it as a surfing instructor in a new environment. So I talk about perseverance at the end of my presentations, how you set up a goal for yourself and you just find ways to make it happen. And I talk about different elements that tie into that.
Yeah. Thanks for the question, Mark. And it was in fact weeks 47, 48, 49, Maine, Alaska, Hawaii. Could you have given yourself further to travel from state to state?
No.
So who were your photographer for and what did you take pictures of in Alaska?
I was working with a guy who's one of National Geographic's photographers based out of Alaska. And it's a very lucrative career if you can, network like he has. He's made $300,000 just on one photo from Sarah Palin.
Wow.
We were doing outdoor work because I thought I would take, pictures of the wildlife and the kind of the environment there. So,
and what time of year was that?
Summer.
Was summer? Okay, yeah. Yeah, summer in Alaska, better than winter in Alaska.
Yeah.
And then off to Hawaii to be a surf instructor. And then you finished up back home in California as a cellar master for which winery?
Domaine Carneris, mm-hmm. Right in Napa Valley. Actually, my original position was working in Hollywood, a movie production company, and they said they were going to assist me on making a documentary on my film. I actually got hit by a car and went to an emergency room a day before I started. So I was 2 weeks out recovering. And so I went back home to my parents' house and kind of reinvented my job and stayed local near my hometown. So
is there still an interest? I mean, you mentioned having some interest in making films earlier on in the program.
I mean, I have so much footage I could, but right now my focus is on, you know, trying to help students that were in my position. And that's kind of where my passion is at this moment.
All right. I want to talk about Living the Map in just a second. But first I want to ask about just one of these other jobs, because you mentioned taking a week off after working as a logger in Oregon. You worked as a wedding coordinator in Nevada. That must have been interesting.
Well,
I mean, we talk about the kind of things where people just drive up and want to get married in 10 minutes.
That was not my first choice. And being adaptable and resourceful is all about what I talk about as well. And I wanted to work at a hotel on the Strip, but every single hotel rejected me. I was used to that, but I had to find an alternative, and found Wedding Chapel after I got my license on the internet, and went chapel to chapel asking if I could become or serve as a reverend for some of these one of these chapels. When I got my foot in the door, they had me do everything. I was a limo driver, I was a florist, I was a photographer, and so forth. So.
Was there ever a point, Daniel, when you mentioned getting hit by the car before you had a chance to do the California job, so that cost you a couple of weeks. I'm glad to see you've recovered. Did you get sick? Did you just otherwise want to stop?
Oh, yeah. Many, many times I've questioned this. I went to the emergency room about 3 or 4 times during this trip because of being really viciously ill, hit by a car, held up by gunpoint in Detroit. There's a lot of things that could have stopped me, but then I always questioned how much better off it will I be and what would I be turning to if I stopped. And then I thought, no, nothing's better than what I'm doing now. I'm going to continuously discover and fulfill my goal.
All right, so let's talk about what you're trying to help other people do right now. And the website is livingthemap.com. And what's that all about?
Well, I'm partnering up with several universities across the country, and it's a now accredited program during the summer. So they get to replicate what I did on a smaller level. So they get to do 5 jobs in 5 weeks. And hopefully, a lot of students that I've reviewed are choosing jobs related to their major, but that's not one of the criteria. They could choose across the board just to get a flavor of what's out there. So it's basically enabling them to get a chance to do what I did and kind of learn and grow and connect. It's basically a new way of learning and a new way of connecting with all walks of life.
So what's the income stream there? How are you able to continue supporting yourself? Support yourself with speaking fees, I would think.
Well, the school will be subsidizing through their tuition. So that's how I pay for the program fees, yeah.
Okay, you didn't stay on the line, but we got a call from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Wants to know how you slept and lived. Did you stay in hotels? Did you augment weekly pay?
I didn't know anyone until I got to the state. So usually a Sunday night I would sleep in my vehicle. Some of those made me a stronger person and made me more adaptable. So whenever I felt uncomfortable, I thought back to some times that were worse. And so ended up going to a job on a Monday and had people willing to host me for a week. I never asked once. People would come up to me, my coworker, employer, where are you staying while you're here in the state? And they offered me a place. So, of course, I wasn't going to turn that down versus thinking back to my days in the vehicle. So just the kindness of strangers. And that's another thing I learned big time. If you really have this purpose and you kind of – it becomes contagious, and your positive attitude, people are willing to help you. And that's kind of what my parents did. You know, if you're showing that you're willing to help yourself, there's a lot of people willing to support.
Tonight's presentation at 5:30 at the Music Recital Hall at Southern Oregon University. Debbie in Talent wants to know if this is generally for adults, and I'm going to guess college-age adults on up, or would it keep the attention of teenagers?
Oh, I've gone to fourth graders on an Indian reservation, and they've been intrigued. I show great videos, have a great presentation, and a great message.
ultimately, let's years down the road there, you know, once you've had a chance to, you know, we all seem to have, it used to be three careers. Now it's more like six or seven careers.
14.
14 is the number now?
I think 12 or 14, yeah.
All right. So what do you think might be the next thing? What do you think you'll be doing in 5 or 10 years?
I don't know. You know, I just did this recent journey because it was sparked off of the first one. And I went to the most struggling and secluded regions of the country, kind of understanding how work affects their lives. And that was all inspired because of my experience in Mississippi, because I saw the most obese community. I actually went back and trained them to get healthy and active. And it was one of the most rewarding experiences I could have ever done in my entire life. And I try to use my experience as a coach and an athlete and kind of parlay that into a kind of rewarding experience. And so I just take it at one step at a time and see where it takes me. So I don't know how this college program is going to turn out, but if it becomes successful, I take it to the next step, see where that goes. So.
50 jobs in 50 states was the quest. Daniel Siddiqui completed that in about a year, and his website is livingthemap.com. You can find out more about his efforts, his book, 50 Jobs in 50 States, and his speaking engagements as well, including the one again tonight at Southern Oregon University at 5:30 at the Music Recital Hall. Daniel Siddiqui, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure being here. Thank you very much.
Good to have you. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange, it's our first Friday art segment at 8 o'clock. Charlotte Dern and I will run down a list of events in performing and visual arts. The more, the merrier. Join us with phone calls and emails. We'll have some studio guests as well in our first Friday art segment. At 8:30, we'll talk about nonprofit leaders convening to compare notes. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to Jacob Hess, a return visitor to the Jefferson Exchange. His latest book is about what's killing romance in America. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Charlotte Duran is our producer. Our student assistant is Reed Newland, operating the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange, here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.